я стиком клянемся. Хайджка сием, не сием, не сияя. Энта съехал я, телит син, хо маску и мастеох.
Austin, hello?
Okay, I think I'll just start talking now. My name is Jeff Lee. I'm in my second year at the University of British Columbia, and this would be my first podcast episode. I guess I need you guys to bear with me today because this is my first episode. But yeah, as I said, my name is Jeff, and today I will be talking about some shows that I've watched on Netflix and possibly have some people watch it too. Okay. Yeah, so I'm just going to be introducing the two shows that I have watched and are possibly my favorite two shows. One is Pending. The one that I'm watching right now is Peaky Blinders, and I have not finished that yet, but I plan to finish it soon. But the first one that I would be talking about today is called Queen's Gambit. I don't know if anyone knows that show or has heard of it or even watched it, and I highly, highly recommend to watch it. All right, let's get started. Queen's Gambit is basically a show about this young girl that is a genius chess player, but she struggles with some things about her personal life and some other things, but she ends up overcoming it later on. This girl basically was taught chess at a very young age, I think the age of 9, from the janitor of her orphanage, because she's an orphan. And that's basically how her journey started. I think what I liked about the film is it's based on the time 1960s. So the costume that they would wear or the setting that would be built was very, very different. And I think they did a fantastic job making all the costumes and the setting and everything. It was pretty realistic when you see the setting. It looks like it was in the 1960s. One other thing that I really liked about the film was the cast was amazing. I think the main actor's name was Anya Taylor-Joy, I think. She was an amazing, amazing actor. And I think that she already has a bright career in front of her. But yeah, I would definitely want to watch other shows that have her in it. There's another thing about this show that I would have to say that I really, really liked is the way that this show was approached at first was quite not interesting, I guess, because I don't play chess. I don't know how to play chess to this day. I don't know how many people do play chess. But yeah, that chess aspect of the show didn't really intrigue me or interest me at all. But when I started watching the show, chess was just a minor thing that was representing the show. It was more about character development, the personhood of the main character, the development of personality, the importance of relationships with close ones. It was far more deeper and included much more hidden meaning in the show. And I think as people start watching the show, chess is not the only thing that really represents it. And I think this hidden meaning applies to our daily life. I would have to say that many people do focus on a lot of things in their life that aren't necessarily the main core, but really take them down and really makes them as if they're not important. And I think it's important to kind of step back and see that whatever you're dealing with will eventually pass and there's more things to come and experience. And I think that's a great lesson that you can learn from either a show or a movie or anything, because sometimes life lessons are very, very well embedded in you, or you remember it through movies or shows. And I think it's just such a more easier way to kind of get that lesson from something that you enjoy watching. And I think that's the beauty of film, because you could just put in a message that you want to send to everybody, but not in a direct or, I guess, like a forcing type of way. You can just kind of just flow it in a show, or just kind of make it happen and have it kind of slowly smooth into someone and have them realize what your meaning is about. All right, next question that I would have to answer is, what would I change from the show? Now, this is a very fantastic question that I made. But anyways, I don't think I would change anything necessarily from the show, just because it was just so well written and the way they made it was just mind-blowing. I personally don't watch a lot of shows or movies that are based in like the 1900s, just because I feel like the relevancy that I have towards the movie or the show wouldn't be as strong compared to the films that are being made today. And the topics and maybe the way that people deal with their problems back in the day is just a bit different. So I feel like I just never was interested in films that were, you know, based back in the day. And I feel like this show really changed my breadth of what I want to watch, or maybe possibly what I want to write about. Because one thing about me is I enjoy writing a lot, and I'm currently taking quite a bit of creative writing courses in school, and I think that one day I would love to make or write my own film. And this time frame that this show was based on seems like a very fun and also kind of relevant time frame. But yeah, that was basically the basic summary, I guess, and review that I have with one of my favorite shows, Queen's Gambit. I would recommend a lot of people to watch it. It's a phenomenal show. I think I want to start off and introduce a song that was as an OST in the Queen's Gambit. And I think it would be amazing to have people listen to it. It's a bit of a different vibe, I guess, because it's a song from the 1900s, I believe. So, but yeah, the song's called You're the One, and it's from the band The Vogues. For some reason, I can't find this band on YouTube. I don't know why. But yeah, many of the songs, if not all the songs that they have created, is an absolute masterpiece. I love the songs. But yeah, soon, after maybe a couple seconds, I will play this song. And I hope that people can listen and just see maybe the era difference of how this song is being portrayed. But yeah, it's called You're the One by The Vogues.
Every time we meet, everything is sweet. Oh, you're so tender, I must surrender. My love is your love now. Don't deceive me, I want you only. You must believe me. You're the one that I long to kiss. Baby, you're the one that I really. there may be some tears through the coming years. Ooh, all the while I know you'll be smiling. Your love will guide me through every mile, 'cause you're the one that I long to kiss. Baby, you're the one that I really miss. You're the one that I'm dreaming of. Baby, you're the one that I love. Yeah, yeah, you're the one that I long to kiss. Baby, you're the one that I really miss. You're the one that I'm dreaming
of. Awesome. But yeah, that was one of the songs that came out in the show Queen's Gambit, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. But yeah, before we move on to the next show that I would be introducing today, I would like to put up an ad. It's called Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop. But yeah.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial. Open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
In the context of Vancouver's opioid crisis, CITR would like to take a moment to share some harm reduction strategies.
Try not to do drugs alone. When going out, let friends know what drugs you're taking and make sure someone has a naloxone kit. If you're able to, get your drugs tested before taking them.
Avoid mixing opioids with alcohol or stimulants. Remember that opioids can include painkillers prescribed by a doctor, and it's possible for any drugs to be contaminated with opioids.
Learn the signs of opioid overdose, which include, but are not limited to, unresponsiveness or unconsciousness, inability to speak, breathing that is slow, erratic, or has stopped completely, heartbeat that is slow, erratic, or has stopped completely, skin tone that has turned blue or gray, choking or gurgling sounds.
If you think someone is overdosing, call 911 immediately. Start rescue breathing and administer naloxone if you have it. You cannot get in trouble for being on drugs, so always call 911 in an emergency.
For more information about naloxone kits and training, visit towardtheheart.com.
Thank you and stay safe.
Awesome. But yeah, that's just the ads that I just put up right now. Before we start, I would like to introduce my friend Jasper, who introduced me to radio hosting. And hello, Jasper. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, Jeff. Good to be with you. Great to see you hosting and on mic. For everyone listening at home, my name's Jasper, and I work here at CITR in the programming department.
Awesome. But yeah, how are you doing?
I'm great. Beautiful day here on campus. I just got out of a really good meeting, and I'm here with you now, so I'm feeling good.
Awesome. But yeah, we're just going to be talking about this show that I am watching currently and haven't finished, but I'm sure many of you guys know the show called Peaky Blinders. It's basically a man named Thomas Shelby that is a leader of a gang. And it's basically like a family business that he's trying to get at. And there's a lot of aspects in the show that show leadership and what it really takes to be a leader. And that really got me thinking whether I'm a leader or a follower, or what I would prefer, or maybe what I have, what kind of traits that I carry to be a leader or a follower. But yeah, Jasper, do you have anything you want to add about what it maybe takes to be a leader, or what kind of person should be a leader, or if anyone can be a leader, it's just they don't know yet?
It's a good question. I think it's really a contextual question. I think there are many different leadership styles, and there are many different situations that call for different leadership styles. You know, I feel like the person you want in an operating room, sort of leading an operating room, is probably different, a different leadership style than what you'd want at, say, a community radio station. But yeah, I think about leadership a lot. I have sort of cultivated my own kind of leadership style over the years, working in various organizations, whether they were commercial or nonprofit, arts-based, whatever. So yeah, we can get into all of that if you want. But I've never seen the show Peaky Blinders, but yeah, I'm excited to learn about it.
Cool. Yeah, I guess one thing that I've noticed about what being a leader is I think that you're not really controlling anything as a leader, which I think might be a misconception that people may have of what it's like to be a leader. It's more about how you're going to be coping with the people you work with, and you're not necessarily above them. You're kind of in the same level as everyone you're with, because you have to work with them in order for you to be the leader. And you're kind of leading the group into a direction that everyone is kind of agreeing to, instead of you just kind of making the decision and going where you want to go. And I think a leader takes much more communication skills and a much more patience than a lot of people may realize. Even at the workplace that I work in, I work at a restaurant part-time, and just looking at the boss and seeing how difficult it can be to even have meetings and have everyone kind of agree with their actions. Because there may be times where people would have conflict with each other, but when it does come to the time where they have a meeting and they talk about what's wrong, it's difficult to kind of have everyone on the same page because they have all their own opinions. And it's kind of up to the boss to kind of de-escalate the situation and really walk through the steps of how they can improve each other's relationships, how they can improve their performance in the restaurant or all that. So I think you can really see that in the show Peaky Blinders. But yeah, I want to ask, Jasper, what do you think is one trait that a leader should have and why?
Well, I can think of leadership that I respond to, and I think the number one thing that I would look for in a leader is kindness or empathy. Why? I mean, I think you said a lot of it. I think, you know, the kind of leader that I try to be and the leadership that I respond to most are leaders who really, like, when I'm in a leadership role, I see my role as being providing everyone around me with the means and resources to accomplish their goals. And I think that a leader's success is measured by the success of the people they're working with. I think kindness and empathy are really important for getting the best out of people, for understanding where people are coming from. You know, I think being a leader requires a lot of emotional flexibility. I think you have to really understand the people you're working with in order to get the best results. And when I say results, I'm talking about, you know, I'm not just talking about material results, but also, you know, people's experiences, because I think that's really important, that people are having good experiences in the places where they choose to spend their time and energy. It's not just about, you know, selling more food or whatever. It's also about, you know, doing your work in a way that is emotionally and creatively satisfying. And I think it is possible for work. You know, I spend a lot of time working in restaurants and cafes and stuff. And I always tried to find ways to connect what I was doing with where I wanted to be in life and where I wanted to go, find ways to develop as a person. You know, even when I was just working at coffee shops, pouring coffee for people, I found ways to sort of use that time to grow. And I'm really grateful for that time. So I think, you know, getting back to your question, yeah, I think kindness and empathy are the number one things that I look for in a leader.
Okay, yeah, I totally agree with you. I'm actually going to go back to the restaurant topic because okay. This is something that I want to ask. You definitely learned some things about being a leader or the boss per se in something. You learn how to like deal with the people there. You learn how everything operates. You learn certain things that you might not learn as a person who works for someone. Do you think that is the case? That's what I think. I think that in order to kind of understand the person working for you or the person you are working with better, you kind of need to some sort of be in their shoes, I guess, or kind of work in that particular area to kind of learn the things that you might not learn from from a certain position. Do you maybe also think that? Maybe because I think you're also a programmer, right?
Yep.
Do you think you learned new things as an up-and-coming programmer, or do you think you learn, like, is it different from what you learned before you do this, you know, as your job and compared to when you like first started to learn how to program?
Yeah, you learn different. It was different. Like before I was working in the programming department, I did host shows and stuff. And that provided me with really good sort of base understanding for stepping into the programming manager role. Yeah, you're right. It is it's very useful to me to understand what it's like to sit in your chair and do what you're doing right now. So when people come to me with problems that they need solving here in the programming department.
Interesting. But yeah, I think today that will be it for all the shows and talking. And maybe the next 20 minutes we'll just be talking about how everything was going. Because me and Jasper we didn't meet until maybe today, actually, because we finished all the trainings a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And then we kind of had some other things to catch up on. So yeah, we'll basically catch up on everything that's been going on. But yeah, before we do that, I'm just going to play another song from the Vogues called Turn Around, Look at Me. Yeah, it's a pretty calming song. So I think it kind of fits into the weather today, which is beautiful. But yeah, I hope you guys enjoy it.
Look at me, and for someone to love and guide you. Turn around, look at me.
Awesome. But yeah, that was not one of the songs from the show Queen's Gambit, but it's from the same band. But yeah, I would highly recommend the band The Vogues to anyone, because it's a good band and they produce nice music. But yeah, before we get into the free talking that we'll be doing, I'm just going to be introducing one show promo.
Copy and Paste with your host Tim, aka Autonomy, the very best in underground dance music.
Okay, but yeah, that's basically the show promo that was just announced. But yeah, getting back to how everything has been going, I just recently heard that you went to UConn. How was that?
I did, yeah. I got to visit the UConn, visited Whitehorse and a city called Carcross for a music festival. The first Labor Day weekend I was up there for 4 days. It's called Wonder Horse. I'm wearing a shirt right now. Wonder Horse. Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
It was great. It was a great trip. I got to hang out with a lot of cool local artists that I'm big fans of, like Devours was up there, Sam Tudor was up there, Divorcer, Yawn. We were all invited to come play this music festival. It was a beautiful trip. What can I say about it? The weather was nice. It was just nice to be up in that part of the world. The city of Whitehorse is sort of situated in a river valley, so I got to explore the city a lot, walk down the river, and I really enjoyed visiting Carcross, which is about 45 minutes outside of Whitehorse. And it's just a really beautiful town that hasn't been there are no Starbucks or McDonald's there or anything, or gas stations. It seems to be sort of removed from the modern context in a really good way. Like, there's no franchises and stuff. It's all very, but there's lots of thriving business there. Like, there's lots of local indigenous business there and cool little saloons and hotels. And then there's this really beautiful lake that has a sand beach and an enormous just mountain that seems to be jutting out of the lake. So we had this really nice day sort of on this beach in this beautiful town. It was really windy and cold, but such a dramatic landscape. I really enjoyed my time there.
That's nice. Did you grow up in UConn, or is it just a place that your family kind of just stays now?
Oh, I'd never been there before. Yeah, I was there for a music festival.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, well, because I, most of my elementary school years, I grew up in Langley, and I would go there, and the same stores would be there. The same stores would be there. There wouldn't be anything new there. So I kind of like that part of where there are certain places that are just not going to be touched for a very, very long time. Mm. And whenever I do go there, maybe after like 10 or 12 years later, I can just kind of feel or like remember the memories that I had there. And sometimes I think that's nice. But I also have this like sad feeling that I would have because those days were over. And like new memories are probably being made by other children that's going to the same school. Mm. Do you ever visit like the schools that you used to go to, maybe elementary or middle school? You kind of like feel those feelings?
Yeah, from time to time, I'll sort of stroll around the old neighborhoods and spend time with that nostalgia. I think that's what you're describing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Hmm. I see. Yeah, because yeah, I would get those feelings, but mostly right now I'm just kind of busy with everything else, with like school and everything. Which I forgot to mention, I declared my major as an English literature major.
Congratulations.
And I think I might minor in creative writing because I just love writing. But yeah, probably soon I'll write like a story or something.
Okay.
Probably fictional, or I'm actually taking a screenwriting class.
Very
so
good.
Maybe possibly I don't know, maybe film something, because but yeah,
well, you're so interested in film and television, that aligns, right?
Yeah. I actually have a question. Do you think films, we're talking about like movies, let's say like strictly movies,
okay,
for films, and for TV let's talk about like what's being broadcasted like right now, like ESPN or whatever that's being on TV. Do you think that aspect of television where it's just being broadcasted is kind of dying in this area, and the film industry where it's like something being created, like YouTube videos, which are being created, like thousands and millions of videos are being created every single day? Do you think that like aspect of like every Tuesday there's going to be a show about like whatever, do you think that kind of is going to be dying, and then the new era of like every day it's new is kind of arising?
Well, yeah, you're right. We live in a time where there's more content than ever. There's more content being generated than we could possibly ever consume. I think the television you're kind of talking about is like live television, like broadcast from a studio kind of television.
Cable, I guess. Cable.
So yeah, it's funny you mentioned cable television, because I haven't watched cable television in like 10, 15 years, but my weekend in Whitehorse, I was staying in a hotel with cable television. So I spent some time watching cable television. It's almost unwatchable.
Yeah.
Like it was just like, you're constantly getting bombarded with like the same commercials, and it's like really hard to navigate. And, you're just watching kind of the same thing over and over and over again. It's become something really weird. Because we live in an era where we can choose the media we consume, right? But like cable television's, the whole model of it was that like you only have whatever 50 channels, and so you have to watch whatever's on TV. That was like how TV was for decades. Growing up, that's how it was for me, right?
Yeah, for me as well.
But now it's like, no, we have YouTube and Netflix and whatever, HBO, whatever. So yeah, I think. I don't know why people still watch cable television when you can stream anything you want so easily. But you know.
I mean, if you put it in a negative way, it's almost like we're losing patience. Because I remember being really excited when I would scroll through whatever 50 channels there were and SpongeBob would come up. And even if it's in the middle of that episode, I'd be like, oh my God, it's SpongeBob. And yeah. I would love it. I would love it.
Yeah, yeah, because you're like, oh, I'm at the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
SpongeBob's on. yeah, we've become accustomed to, you know, the on-demand consumption style for media. Like we no longer have to watch stuff we don't want to watch because it's just wide open.
Do you also think that the way that we feel excitement and the feeling of looking forward to something has kind of been desensitized because of how easily accessible it is for us to choose whatever media we want to watch?
Yeah, there's probably something to that. We're definitely less patient. We expect things to happen instantly. And again, on demand, that's what it's called, right? It's like we've become entitled to it. Like we feel like entitled to be able to access, you know, media immediately and for cheap or free, which is, you know, it has its, yeah, it's problematic. It's in some ways, you know, for creators, for instance, you know, it's like musicians don't make any money from people listening to their music anymore. But on the other hand, as a consumer, you have access to, you know, the global library of music over the entire course of recorded history, which is really powerful. I think there's, you know, for creators, there's also like a discoverability benefit to that. If you can find ways to break through all the noise. So I think it's an interesting time to be making stuff. But yeah, generally speaking, consumers like of media, and I include myself in this, we're impatient and we expect instantaneous gratification from the things we watch. And yeah.
Because I feel like now we don't really get the excitement of, oh my God, like 10 minutes. Like we have to get home early because in 10 minutes, yeah, SpongeBob's coming up.
Yeah.
Or do you think that type of happiness that we used to get, do you think it's a good thing that now we've discovered something more that makes us more happy? Or do you think that that simple happiness is something that we should have?
No, I don't think it makes us more happy. I think what ends up happening is we just overconsume. And like I think you used the word desensitized. Like I do think we become desensitized to media because we're bombarded with it and we seem to have an endless appetite for it. You know, well, you can watch an entire season of a show in a weekend. And that used to take, you know, 6 months.
Yeah. Right? Oh, I can't even imagine. How can you wait 6 months?
Well, it feels now unreasonable that they release a show like one show at a time. And you're like, I can't believe I have to wait a week to see the next installment of this saga. Mm. Like that feels torturous.
Yeah, it's a lot. But yeah, I think a lot has changed through the years. I mean, I'm only in my second year and I could feel that already. I'd see like children 7 or 8 years old and they're already like, you know what I've never understood? I never understood. I'd see my parents or my grandparents struggling with like technology and stuff and I'd be like, the buttons are right there.
Yeah.
But when I see like my younger cousins or younger kids doing stuff and I'm like, wait, how do you do that?
And they're like, yeah, Jeff.
And they're like, yeah, right. And I'm like, oh my goodness.
It's happening.
Yeah. It's like, what? Because it just kind of amazes me at this point. I mean, I don't even get mad. It's more of like, wow, I never knew this was going to hit me.
It's a new thing. The rate of sort of, I mean, the rate of technological change that we experience these days, it's entirely new, right? It's, you know, once we had, it's like post-industrial revolution kind of change, which just accelerates. And so, you know, you can imagine prior to that, there, you know, cultures and sort of from that, you know, technological change, which curves upwards, there's also a sort of rate of cultural change that comes with it. And prior to industrialization and computers and electricity, like we wouldn't have to contend with that as much. Like cultures and ways of doing things were relatively static. Like we didn't have breakthroughs in technology, you know, annually. We would go decades where processes wouldn't change. So it's a new phenomenon, you know, like having your 7-year-old nephew teach you about technology, yeah. Like that, that's entirely new.
That's, but yeah, I guess this is the last question of my podcast today, but you see the trends that are going on in our world, whether it's fitness, well-being, a lot of people are into that, you know, going to the gym. I don't know if you've heard of the bodybuilder C-Bum.
No, I haven't.
He's basically an idol for most teenagers, or I guess, or bodybuilders. He's an amazing athlete. Or that trend. I call it a trend because it's on media a lot. And nowadays, if you just get that spark, you immediately you turn on or you start a YouTube channel and you'll just get subscribers just as fast as anything. But yeah, those trends that go on, like fitness, or whether it's, I don't know, like Pilates, or food, I don't know, maybe Korean food is like a trend or whatever, or movies, or becoming a YouTuber as a career choice. Maybe that was a trend. A lot of children were wanting to do that for a while. It actually came on the news. That was like a big percentage of what they would ask children, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Or like, I want to be a YouTuber. That was a trend. Do you think, so far, technology has been escalating for a very, like, it just hasn't been stopping. It just continues to go up. Do you think there'll be a time where it'll eventually fall into the olden technology, or possibly kind of our world will maybe be on a break using technology one day? Because right now it's just escalating tremendously. And I feel like anything that escalates, it has to come down some way or some time. So if you give it enough time, do you think that trend or escalation of whatever is being developing right now is going to eventually come down and kind of maybe take a break or something?
Well, I do think that unlimited growth is unsustainable. You know, we seem to be obsessed with growth, you know, economic growth, and yeah, as you say, technological growth. To my mind, it does seem unsustainable that we can just continue forever. I mean, we can see that, like, ecologically, we're sort of pushing the limits of what's, I mean, if we have not already exceeded the limit of what our planet can even sustain in terms of, like, resource extraction and growth. And even, you know, with microchips, there are limits to what, like, silicone-based microchips can do. And we're fast from, I should preface this with saying that I am not an engineer, and so I don't really know what I'm talking about. Mm. But from what I've gleaned from listening to experts speak, there is a ceiling to, like, silicone-based microchips capabilities. The last 2 years, we've even sort of discovered how fragile the sort of global infrastructure, the supply chain is. You know, like, we ran out of stuff. So I do think that we're sort of approaching a point where it's like we need to reconsider, like, the value of growth, because it's you know, to be blunt, I think it might be our downfall, this obsession with growth. So, I hope that we can have some kind of it's optimistic, but I do hope that there can be some kind of rebalancing of values globally, so that we're like, hey, maybe we don't need to, like, maximize profit and extraction, and we don't need, like, new phones every year, and we don't need, I'm not sure why we're trying to figure out how to go to Mars when we can't even, like, feed everybody. You know what I mean? Like,
I know what you mean.
And, like, I love, don't get me wrong, I'm all for, like, you know, exploration and discovery and pushing the limits of what humans can achieve and learning, you know, I'm all for learning, but it's like, oh man, we need to prioritize, like, you know, survival and feeding people and housing people. That's just my two cents.
I totally agree with you. I don't know. I guess it's okay, because it's more of like an individual thing. It's just like those certain amount of people that are trying to achieve something that most people aren't thinking about. I can imagine.
The thing is like, human curiosity is unstoppable, right? So you can never stop human beings from just trying to test limits and discover things. And so with that in mind, if the right people with the right drive have the resources to push things farther, push technology and understanding farther, they will. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's just like, it's like we need to remove the like profit motive from these like these huge corporate entities, which are designed to consume and they're designed to maximize profit, and they are like they're obligated to, and that's how the corporate structure works. They're legally obligated to their shareholders to maximize profit, and that's just, you know, it leads to bad things. Anyways, yeah. But that's a whole other conversation, Jeff.
Awesome. Yeah, I guess we'll hold that to our next episode. I had a lot of fun. Yeah, since this was my first podcast, I think it was a bit nervous. Like maybe 20 minutes in, I think I kind of got...
You got your groove?
Yeah, kind of, you know, and just see what it was like. But I actually do not know how to end this, so I think I might want some help with
the
ending part. But yeah, thank you for joining me in my first episode, and I hope to see you all on my next.
Cool. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Thank you.